Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. We've been talking a lot about not identifying as the body, identifying as soul, spirit, consciousness, love. But what about when other people identify us as the body? First, of course, there's the individual level. Oh, you're hot. I'd like to take you to bed. Well, that's an identification with the body. Or, oh, you're really beautiful. You should be the model in my magazine. Again, identification with the body. Or, oh, you're really ugly. I couldn't possibly hire you for this job because identification with the body. But she's asking it on a macro level. Those are individual levels. A macro level is you're black, you're white, you're female, you're of this caste, you're of this religion, you're of this socioeconomic status, you're in a group that has to do either with the color of your skin, where you were born, who your parents are, what your gender is, what you in this body have earned and achieved and acquired. And when based on that, we have access to things or we don't have access to things. This is a two-part question because there's an inner answer and there's an outer answer, and they're equally important, and it wouldn't be full if we didn't do both. On an inner level, we refuse to identify as that. So you may see me as body, either on an individual level or on a macro level. But that doesn't mean I have to buy into it. Every woman in this room has had a situation in their life, probably many, in which they've been looked at by a man in such a way that it's very obvious that what he's looking at is just the body. And he's not looking at it with the thought of, God, I'd really like to get to know the soul inside. But rather, he's looking at it as an object. We have this experience. You have it growing up. You have it walking down the street. But we don't have to internalize that. For most of us, it doesn't bother us. I mean, you just understand, yeah, sometimes men are like that. I remember when I spent a year, it doesn't happen much in America, at least not in terms of like on the street heckling, but when I spent a year in Ecuador after graduating from university, you'd walk down the street and they would literally heckle you. And in the beginning it was upsetting and off-putting and, you know, and then you realized this isn't about me. Goes back to the earlier thing. It's not about me. It's not about who I really am anyway. It's just about my vehicle. It's like saying someone saying, hey, snazzy, nice new red car. I don't have to buy into it. I don't have to respond. I don't have to feel like a body. I don't have to feel like a sex object. And I also don't have to turn around and slap them. I don't have to respond or buy into this at all. All I have to know is not about me. Because if I'm furious and I turn around and slap them, well, then it was me that they've insulted. I've identified as the being they heckled. And that's why I'm so angry. So the mantra of not me, not me. And the same is true on this macro level. You find yourself in situations. I'll give you a personal example. We've gone to Kailash Mansarovar many times, built ashrams there. On the way, we go through Nepal. Well, in Nepal, there is a very, very, very famous, incredible temple that every time we go is part of the itinerary to go and have darshan at this sacred temple, unless you're white. The rule theoretically is you have to be Hindu, but really what the rule is, you have to be brown. And we discovered that by the fact that they would let in all kinds of brown Christians and brown Jews. I mean, it didn't matter. Nobody was checking what your religion was when you went in. Nobody was asked to recite mantras or give their, nothing. There was no qualification to get in. The guards just stood there and everybody poured in, unless you were white, at which point they'd point at you and grab you and pull you out. And I had an interesting personal experience with that, because with us was a man who worked in the Indian government. And when they stopped me, he said, I was fine with it, really fine with it. I was very happy to sit and meditate in the garden while everybody else went in for darshan. He wouldn't hear of it. He was like, this is ridiculous. And he said to the guards, but she's Hindu, she's a sannyasi, for God's sake. She's not even just a Hindu believer. She's someone who has actually taken vows of renunciation in the Hindu tradition. Ask her anything, she'll answer anything. And he says to me, start chanting some mantras. So I start chanting some mantras. And he says to the guard, can you chant those? And of course the guard can't. And then the guard says, well, you have to be Indian or Nepali Hindu. She's American Hindu. So I said, well, you know, half the group you just let in are carrying American passports, have never stepped foot in India. Like, their parents or grandparents were from India. They were born in America or in London, or because our trips into Tibet brought people from all over the world. We had hundreds of people. And they'd say, well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. He clearly had no answer. As we got down point by point, well, what about this? What about that? It became abundantly clear that it was about nothing other than the color of your skin. You're brown, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your religion, you get in. You're white, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your religion, you don't. Now, I share that personal experience because you have two options. Again, here we are at a crossroad. It happened. Either I become angry, I become upset, I feel insulted. I've given my life to this religion. I'm the managing editor of the Encyclopedia of Hinduism. Like, I brought out an 11-volume encyclopedia. What other criteria do these guys need? And you could have that start to go. Or you can say, not about me. And this is true regardless of what the situation is. Now, there are a lot of, I've purposely given a personal and not very consequential example. There's obviously a depth that this goes to that becomes violence. Whether it's apartheid, by law, or whether it's not necessarily by law but simply by practice, whether it's rights of women, whether it's rights of people of certain castes, whether it's rights of people of certain colors, it's violence. But it's important for us, before we start addressing it on the outside, to address it on the inside, which is not about me. In the same way that if someone even physically attacked your body, insulted you, you understand, again, it's not about me. It's not about who I really am, because I'm not the body. I'm the consciousness, I'm the love, I'm the infinite. And if they can't see themselves in me, well, I'm going to still keep trying to see me in them. Because ultimately we're all one. And the highest goal is not, can I see you as a body, but can I see me in you? And just recognizing we're driving different cars, and to have the experience of, oh, wow, yeah, there you are in there. Yeah, I know you. But not I know this body. I know the you in the body. So that's the first step. But the second piece, and it's not really first and second, it's more just piece one and piece two, because they should happen together. The second piece is the outer part. Spirituality is not about, and I repeat this really frequently in here, spirituality is not about how can I be at peace with the problems afflicting the world. It's not about how can I be at peace with the fact that there are children starving to death. How can I be at peace with the poverty in the world? How can I be at peace with what's happening to our environment? How can I be at peace with violence? That's not the goal. Those are things we have to fight against. The goal is not how can I, because a lot of times people come in, they say, I get so upset about it. The answer is, yeah, we should be upset about it. In so far as our upsetness is a catalyst to action, and in so far as it doesn't render me unable to act intelligently, because I'm so angry and I've taken it so personally, that my action becomes not something that's effective, not something that actually benefits others, but just me lashing out in anger. So I need to be at peace only enough that I'm not reacting, and so that I'm able to plan, because the truth is our brains don't work very well when we're stressed. When we're really upset, we're not very good planners and thinkers. And so when something has impacted us so much that we're furious or we're deeply miserable, we're not actually going to be able to figure out the way to act against it that's effective. And that's what we are called upon to do. So we need enough upsetness that we act. Otherwise, we become complacent. So it needs to impact us deeply enough that it catalyzes in us the action. But it should not paralyze us. And these are things we need to work against. Absolutely. Because it is violence. To deprive anyone of anything that you could give them. And if I don't have the ability to give it to you, that's different. But if I've got an I, whether it's I as the government, I as an institution, if I've got the ability to give you, whether it's food, whether it's water, whether it's employment, whether it's housing, whether it's human rights, and I don't give it to you, that's violence. And we are absolutely called upon to act against violence. But we need to do it from a place of clarity. Otherwise, it just becomes a useless war. It becomes the blind fighting the blind.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's rainn.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. The question is, how do I know if I've attained enlightenment or self-realization? When things are real, we feel them and we know them 100%. If you're standing in Ganga, you're in Ganga up to your shoulders, up to your neck, up to your nose. People on the shore could be shouting at you, "You're dry, you're dry, you're dry," all they want. And it wouldn't have any impact because you know you're wet. The experience of being wet is so real that it doesn't matter what people shout. Even if you've got a voice in your mind that says, you don't deserve to be wet, you don't deserve to be in Ganga, Ganga will never make you wet. The minute you're standing there, the experience of being wet trumps every voice of doubt in your mind. It trumps everything anybody on the shore could shout at you. And the same thing is true when you're really in love. Not when you're in lust, not when you are in just momentary passion, not when you're in instinct or impulse. When we're young, we fall in love, we have this feeling of this is it forever. It's impulse. It's emotion, it's passion. But when you really, once you really love, and it doesn't matter if it's a romantic love, if it's love for your parent, if it's love for your child, once you really love, you know it. You never doubt. There's no voice in your mind that says, do I really love my mom? Do I really love my child? Do I really love? Once you experience it, you know. And the same thing is true with realization and enlightenment, because we know right now the light is on in this room. Now, I could try to convince you all that actually we're sitting in the darkness. You can't see, hold your hand up in front of your eyes, you can't even see it, you have no idea how many fingers I'm holding up. But it doesn't matter how much I say that. You know the light is on. You know you can see. You're bound to think I'm crazy long before you're going to think you're crazy. If I say to you, you can't see my hand, and you know you can, you're not going to ask yourself, God, am I going crazy? You're going to think, God, is she going crazy? Because it's so obvious that the light is on. When you attain enlightenment, the light is on. And knowing the difference between being in the light and being in the dark is something that we all have. And yet, the good news is, it's not all or nothing. We don't have to feel like we are hopeless and helpless just because we haven't fully gotten there. It's a process of unfolding, opening every single day, every minute, every moment. Because once we're really living in the light, the darkness has no hold over us. It's like that beautiful saying that, you know, a single candle dispels the darkness.
No amount of darkness can do anything to the light. Once the light is on, the darkness is over. But when we think about our darkness, what is that darkness? I mean, darkness in the room is obvious. The lights go out. But what's the opposite of enlightenment within myself? It's not dark in terms of evil. It's not dark in terms of bad. It's dark in terms of ignorance. This is how the Indian spiritual tradition understands and speaks about darkness, is it's ignorance. And in that darkness of ignorance, I can't see. And when I can't see, I make assumptions. And the assumptions are, I am this body. I am what I look like. I am what my career is. I am how much money I earn. I am all of these things. And then what other people do determines my mood. Right? I was in such a good mood, and then you did this. I was so peaceful. I was so happy. Then you arrived. Or you did this. Or you said that. When we're living in the light, that darkness doesn't happen to us. My inner sthiti, what you can call swasthiti, my inner situation, sthiti is situation, swas of myself. So my swasthiti, most of us think it's determined by padasthiti, which is the situation on the outside, surrounding me, around me. So how I feel is determined by the world around me. Swasthiti determined by parasthiti. When parasthiti is going according to how I want it to go, my swasthiti is great. You do what I want. You say what I want. It's sunny on the day I'm supposed to have a picnic. I'm happy. You don't do what I want. You don't say what I want. It rains on my picnic. I'm sad. That's the darkness. The light is my swasthiti, my inner situation is so light that it doesn't matter what happens on the outside. It doesn't impact me. And in fact, it goes the other way. My swasthiti is so light that I change the parasthiti. So instead of it being jese parasthiti vese swasthiti, as is the outer, so is the inner, it becomes jese swasthiti vese parasthiti. As is the inner, so becomes the outer. And when that happens, then we're living in the light. And that's what enlightenment is. It's just living in the light. You know, Pooja Swamiji always says, it's not like somehow suddenly your skin changes colors, or you grow, you know, horns on your head, or it's an inner shift. But along the way, even if we're not quite there yet, even if sometimes what happens on the outside impacts us, we're moving. Moving minute by minute, day by day. And the good news is, every minute is a new opportunity. An hour ago, I let my internal situation be determined by outside. Okay, well look, right now, I have another opportunity. That's the great thing about being on a spiritual path in this universe, especially in the Kali Yuga. We get so many opportunities. Every minute, every moment is another opportunity to wake up. Missed it last moment? No problem. You have another opportunity. Because the world is going to keep presenting you with situations that put you at a fork in the road. The fork in the road is, where do I want to go with this? Okay, so this thing has just happened. Can't change that. That's now the fork in my road. This has happened.
Now it's up to me where I'm going to go from it. How we think is actually what determines where we go. If you walked into a train station or an airport or a bus station and you said to the person behind the counter, the person at the desk, "I'd like a ticket," what's the first thing they're going to say to you? Where to? Where to? Because unless I know where to, nobody can sell me a ticket. I could go in, I could say, "I want a first class ticket," or "I want the cheapest ticket you've got." They're still going to say, "Where to?" And until I know where I want to go, I can't buy a ticket. And each ticket I buy determines where I go. Sounds simple, sounds obvious. But we don't pay attention to that in our lives. Every time I'm at this fork in the road, every time something happens, someone says something, someone does something, the stock market crashes, my house burns down, or the little things. I got yelled at. I got scolded. Somebody was mean to me. I was cheated on. Not such a little thing, but these things happen in life. It happens. Now I'm at a fork in the road. Where do I want to end up? Because each road takes us to a different place. And each thought about what has happened is a ticket of which train or which bus or which flight we're getting on. And the mistake that most of us make is we buy the tickets and get on the trains or the planes that our family did, that our culture did, that people around us did, even though on a conscious level we know we don't want to end up in that place. But one train can't take you to two different destinations. If you get on a train to Calcutta, you cannot imagine that you're going to end up in Chennai. If you want to go to Chennai, you've got to buy a ticket and get on the train or the plane to Chennai. And if what we want in life is to be enlightened, or even if we're not quite so ambitious, we just want to be happy. We just want to be in peace. We just want to be fulfilled. Then why do we keep buying tickets and getting on vehicles that are taking us to misery, to competition, to jealousy, to lack of peace in ourselves? It's not conscious, of course, but it's because that's where the crowd is going. And so we just kind of follow the crowd and we end up on the train to misery. But every moment gives us another opportunity. I got on the train to misery last month. I remember the whole crowd was going in that direction. I joined them. I don't want to do that again. I've got a choice. Right now, this has happened. Okay. You've landed at the station. You've landed at the airport. Now it's up to you. Where are you going to go? And the great thing about it is, what I do this minute, if it's a mistake, if in this minute I have a thought of anger, I hate you, I can't believe you did that, and now I start plotting vengeance, or I just let it eat myself up inside, wrong train. But 15 minutes later or 10 minutes later or an hour later, when again I think, oh God, again I have another opportunity. Wait, I've done that before. I know where this flight goes. I don't want to go there anymore. And then we stop and we say, all right, time for a new vehicle. And if you don't like it, if you don't like the ticket to forgiveness, the ticket to let it go, the ticket to it's in God's hands. Well, an hour. or later, you can always jump back on the misery train. So when you make those choices, it's important to allow yourself, because when we're really upset, there's this voice inside of us that says, I don't want to let it go. So it's important to tell yourself, well, it's all right. If you want to pick it back up an hour from now, you're welcome to. That train will still be available. But for right now, since we know where misery train goes, we know where anger train goes, we know where competition and jealousy and ego trains go. We know that. We've been riding them our whole lives. Why not? Why not just see? Just see what happens if I jump on the forgiveness train. What happens if I jump on the let it go train? What happens if I jump on the, well, maybe it was supposed to be like this train? Maybe it was not that the universe made a mistake and I just have to forgive the universe. Maybe this actually was how it was supposed to happen. Maybe the universe actually knew exactly what it was doing. Imagine that. When it made this happen. Maybe the plight of all of the farmers with desiccated fields was more important than the picnic I had planned, hence it rained. And imagine that it's not actually about me and my picnic. Because we always feel like it's always about us. I planned a picnic, it was my birthday, it rained. The universe is out to get me. And it never occurs to us that maybe this wasn't really about me. Maybe there's millions of farmers depending on this rain, and it was about them. Maybe it's about the children without water to drink. And the same thing is true with everything. Whether it's an act of nature that we call nature, whether it's an act of the nature of the people we live with, or work with, or are involved with. It's almost never about us. And real enlightenment is when we see that. Because remember, the light's on. In the darkness, the light is off, we think it's about us. And we respond like that. When the light's on, we realize it's not about us. And we can let it go. We forgive. And it doesn't impact our swastiti.
This is OTRFM. Part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. In my meditation practice, it's important not to strive for a specific target, but just to open myself up and face up the thoughts that have come, whether they're good or bad, and repeat my mantra, with a free mental attitude. Would the same apply to open myself up for God consciousness? Okay, so basically what the question is when I'm meditating, it's important for me not to have a specific goal or target, but just to be open. If I'm striving for God consciousness, is it the same thing? Should I have a goal? Should I have a target? Or should I just be open? Well, we always should have a goal. And the reason that we always should have a goal is, even in meditation, even if we're not striving for God consciousness, if we simply open ourselves up to all of the thoughts that come, what happens? The thoughts come. And what we find is that they just keep coming and keep coming. Now, as we speak all the time, the answer is not push them away. The answer is not berate yourself. The answer is also not, of course, latch yourself into one of them and carry it as far as it'll take you. So it's not, I have a thought about how beautiful, even just something beautiful. Oh, the arti was so beautiful. Great. But if I latch myself into it, it becomes the arti was so beautiful. God, I wish I could do that every night. Yet tomorrow I've got to leave. I wish I didn't have to leave. Oh my God, I didn't check in for my flight. I'm not going to get the right seat. Yeah, last time I remember I was sitting next to this really fat, stinky guy. And so you see, in not even 30 seconds, I've gone from the beauty of the arti to the fat, stinky guy on the plane next to me. This is the nature of what happens with thoughts. And this is why they carry us away. The moment we latch ourselves into one, we hook into a thought, you're somewhere else, as Pooja Swamiji always says, with no ticket, no visa. So we are aware of the fact that thoughts come. But that's very different than opening ourselves up to them like an open house to unwanted guests. Just because I don't kick the guests out or beat them to death doesn't mean that I'm going to hang up an open sign. And the same is true in our meditation. We should have a goal. We should have a target. And what the goal and the target is, whether you call it God consciousness, whether you call it enlightenment, whether you call it self-realization, whether you call it samadhi, nirvana, I mean, we could do this all night and come up with so many different terms that we use, but that's the goal. That's the target. And in order to experience that, I need to be focused. Whether I'm focused on my mantra, I'm focused on my breath, I'm focused on an image of the divine, I'm focused on a prayer. If I don't maintain that focus, I'm going to hook on to all of the thoughts that come and find myself carried away constantly. Meditation is simply about coming back to the truth of who we are, coming back to the real self, which means I need to be focused on removing that which is not real self. Focused on when I see an emotion, God, that made me so angry when this happened, and anger. And we let it go. We don't rehearse it. We don't hook into it. It's not self. Not me. So that slowly we've got this distinction going between self, that space between the thoughts, that experience when I really am quiet for a split moment and I touch it, self. And not self, that which keeps coming, the thoughts, the emotions, the memories, the feelings. And when we can do that, that's when we're able to sustain the experience. So for God consciousness, yeah, that is the goal. It's not about just open myself up to everything that comes. We stay aware that this is the truth of who I am. And this is the self, and I'm going to just peel back layer after layer after layer. And then eventually we get to that point. Because remember, God consciousness is the same as self-realization. Two different terms for the same phenomenon. Because the awareness of the self, the realization of the self, is that I am divine. That's the realization I'm supposed to have. It's realization of the capital S self as divine, not realization of me as a 5'3" white American female. Not that realization. The realization of me as consciousness, me as love, me as divinity, me as the one in the body as vehicle, me as the one noticing the journey it's on, the yatra it's on, the points along the way, but always removed from it, always still, always whole. And that's God consciousness. When we always talk about we've been created not just by the Creator, but of the Creator. Well, that self-realization is God consciousness. God consciousness is not about, well, how would God act in this situation? It's not about playing a role or a part, or I've got to be a doctor in the school play. Can I get myself into doctor consciousness so I can do the role well? What would a doctor say or do in this moment? It's not about that. So how can my consciousness merge with the divinity so that I am aware that who I am is divine? And lastly, that I am aware, therefore, that all of that with which I'm interacting is also divine. And that's very important, because a lot of times what happens on the spiritual path is I'm living in God consciousness, so you should be the one to take out the trash tonight. Because that would disrupt my God consciousness. I'm in God consciousness, so you should, massage my feet and take care of me and do the dishes. And God is not bounded or bordered by this body. So if I'm really having God consciousness, then it's the consciousness that you and I are one. It has to begin with the self, of course, because only then can I recognize it in others. But if I'm really living in God consciousness, it means I'm interacting with the world as God and as consciousness. And that is a goal. And it's a beautiful goal. And sadly, the human mind and the human ego are such rascals of their own sorts that if we just give them an open field on which to play, that's exactly what they'll do. And that's why we have meditation techniques. It's why we come to satsang. It's why we pray. It's why we sit at the feet of the gurus. It's why we do all of those things to help us really get pinpointed and focused on that, so that our consciousness doesn't become just an open field for the play of ego, of mind, of illusion, and of ignorance.
This is OTR FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. If we can see the truth in many different ways, from many different paths. In the Hindu scriptures, there's a beautiful teaching that says the truth is one, the sages call it by different names. In another teaching, we're told, let all the noble thoughts come from all the directions. So we've got this teaching rooted in the idea that there's so many different ways of getting at the truth. He said, but then how do you know which one is right when they seem to be conflicting? Where there is conflict, you can actually be pretty sure there isn't truth. The truth, for it to be real, there's two types of truth. We've got our capital T truth, eternal truth, unchanging truth, the truth of the stuff that our scriptures are made of that's just as true today in Manhattan or Paris or New York or London, as was true in Kurukshetra or Ayodhya or anywhere thousands and thousands of years ago. And then you've got what we'll call our lowercase t truth. It's still true, it's not a lie, but it's true at this intersection of time and space. So right now it's 7:22 p.m., that's true. I'm not lying. And yet, it's lowercase t because it's only true for us. If you pick up the phone and you call someone in London or California, it's not 7:22 for them. And it's not even going to be true for us in 60 seconds, at which point it'll be 7:23. Wasn't true for us a minute ago when it was 7:21. So it's only true at this intersection of time and space. Where you get conflict is in lowercase t truths. So you could get on the phone with someone in California and you could say, it's 7:23. And they would say, no, it's not. It's 6:53 in the morning. True for them. True for you. But if you didn't have the wisdom to understand the fact that you were both right, you could get into a big fight over it. It is not morning. What are you talking about? Look outside. It's dark. Are you crazy? Are you blind? The person would say to you, what are you blind? It's sunny. The sun is up. It's gorgeous. It's a brand new day. If you started fighting enough, you could actually start killing each other over it. Conflict arises with lowercase t truth when we try to turn it into capital T truth. It's hot in this room. My experience. Somebody else could say, no, it's not. We're in the same room, same time, same place, different experiences. This meal is too spicy. Same food, same time, same dish, sitting across the table from each other. Entirely different experiences of the food. Now, most of us have the wisdom to understand that I could be hot while you could be cool. I could enjoy the food while you're sweating out of your scalp. It could be night for us and morning for someone else. But now you imagine if I decided that my experience of this food was not just lowercase t truth, but was capital T truth. This food is perfect. That is canon. And for you to so much as insinuate that you're sweating out of your scalp is sacrilege. Now, all that's happened is I have taken my experience of the truth and turned it into a global, timeless, eternal, all-pervasive truth. My mistake. But should I happen to be someone with a lot of followers and a lot of power, I actually could try to start a movement of the fact that anyone who thought that chilies were spicy should be shot and killed. Chilies are great. Food is horrible without them. They're a crucial aspect of a meal. Anybody with any other thought should be hanged. You see where things start to go awry. If it's real truth, the truth that our scriptures talk about, the truth that may have different names but is one, there actually isn't conflict. There may be conflict in interpretation of that, because typically those truths come from scriptures that tend to be written in ancient languages. We are dependent upon different people to translate and interpret those for us. And people who are translating and interpreting are human, they're fallible. God knows they might also be biased or have their own agenda. So what you end up with are different interpretations or translations. But if you actually had the ability to understand in its original language, what you would know is there is no conflict in that truth. If it's capital T truth, it's the same for everyone. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.